What's poppin', guys, und welcome back zu einer neuen Podcast-Folge. Ich weiß, es ist schon ein bisschen her, dass ich jetzt mal wieder eine aufgenommen habe, oder? Ja, aber ich habe heute irgendwie Lust, eine aufzunehmen. Genau. Und wir werden jetzt We Were Liars lesen, weil wir das jetzt im Englischunterricht lesen müssen. Und ich werde jetzt auch nochmal von vorne anfangen, auch wenn ich eigentlich schon kann. Ich habe irgendwie schon 4 Seiten gelesen, aber ich lese das jetzt nochmal von vorne. Und ja, ich würde sagen, wir werden auch gleich anfangen. Okay. Also, es ist jetzt Part 1. Wartet mal. Part 1. Und das der ist Welcome. Warte mal. Also, hier steht halt nichts hinten wirklich drauf. Ich kann ja mal vorlesen, was hinten drauf steht. If anyone asks you how it ends, just lie. We are Sinclairs. We live at least in the summertime on a private island off the coast of Massachusetts. Schreckliches Wort. Perhaps that is all you need to know. Except that some of us are liars. Ja gut, Leute. Mein Englisch ist heute auch nicht das Beste. Verzeiht mir. Wird schon gehen. Okay. Let's go. Kapitel 1. Oder Chapter 1. Keine Ahnung. Ich weiß gar nicht, was Kapitel auf Englisch heißt. Welcome to the beautiful Sinclair family. No one is a criminal. No one is an addict. No one is a failure. The Sinclairs are athletic, tall and handsome. We are old money Democrats. Our smiles are wide. Our shins square. And our tennis serves aggressive. It doesn't matter if the force shreds the muscles of our hearts so that they will hardly beat without a struggle. It doesn't matter if trust fund money is running out, if credit card bills go unpaid on the kitchen counter. It doesn't matter if there's a cluster of pill bottles on the bedside table. It doesn't matter if one of us is desperately, desperately in love. So much in love that equally desperate measures must be taken. We are Sinclairs. No one is needy. No one is wrong. We live, at least in the summertime, on a private island off the coast of Massachusetts. Perhaps that is all you need to know. Chapter 2. My full name is Candace Sinclair Eastman. I live in Burlington, Vermont, with mommy and 3 dogs. I am nearly 18. I own a well-used library card and not much else. Not much else. Through it is true I live in a grand house full of expensive, useless objects. I used to be blonde, but now my hair's black. I used to be strong, but now I'm weak. I used to be pretty, but now I look sick. It is true I suffer migraines since my accident. It is true I do not suffer fools. I like a twist of meaning, you see. Suffer migraines. Do not suffer fools. The word means almost the same as it did in the previous sentence, but not quite. Suffer. You could say it means endure, but that's not exactly right. My story starts before the accident. June of the summer, I was 15. My father ran off with some woman he loved more than us. Dad was a middling successful professor on a military history. Back then I adored him. He wore tweed jackets. He was gaunt. He drank milky tea. He was fond of board games and let me win. Fond of boats and taught me to kayak. Fond of bicycles, books, and art museums. He was never fond of dogs and was a sign of how much he loved my mother that he let our golden retrievers sleep on the sofas and walk them 3 miles every morning. He was never fond of my grandparents either, and it was a sign of how much he loved both me and mommy that he spent every summer in Whitmer House on Beechwood Island, writing articles on wars fought long ago, and putting on a smile for the relatives at every meal. That June, summer 15, Dad announced he was leaving, and departed 2 days later. He told my mother he wasn't a Sinclair, and couldn't try to be one any longer. He couldn't smile, couldn't lie, couldn't be part of that beautiful family and those beautiful houses. Couldn't, wouldn't. He had hired moving vans already. He rented a house too. My father put a last suitcase into the back seat of the Mercedes. He was leaving Mummy with only the sap, and started the engine. Then he pulled out a handgun and shot me in the chest. I was standing on the lawn and I fell. The bullet hole opened wide, and my heart rolled out of my ribcage and down into a flower bed. Blood gushed rhythmically from my open wound, then from my eyes, my ears, my mouth. It tastes like salt and failure. The bright red shame of being unloved soaked the grass in front of our house, the bricks of the path, the steps to the porch. My heart spasmed among the pinions like a trout. Mummy snapped. She said to get hold of myself. Be normal, now, she said. Right now, she said. Because you are, because you can be. Don't cause a sense, she told me. Breathe and sit up. I did what she asked. She was all I had left. Mummy and I tiled our square shins high as Dad drove down the hill. Then we went indoors and trashed the gifts he'd given us. Jewelry, clothes, books, anything. In the days that followed, we got rid of the couch and armchairs my parents had bought together, tossed the wedding china, the silver, and the photographs. We purchased new furniture, hired a decorator, placed an order for Tiffany's silverware, spent a day walking through art galleries, and bought paintings to cover the empty spaces on our walls. We asked Granddad's lawyers to secure Mummy's assets. Then we packed our bags and went to Beechwood Island. Mama, ich muss mich einmal ein bisschen besser hinsetzen. Bisschen blöd. Ja gut, ich bin gerade aus Versehen auf Abbrechen gekommen. Naja, egal. Machen wir weiter. Chapter 3. Penny, Carrie and Bess are the daughters of Tipper and Harry Sinclair. Harry's came into his money at 21 after Harvard and grew the fortune doing business I never bothered to understand. He inherited houses and land. He made intelligent decisions about the stock market. He married Tipper and kept her in the kitchen and the garden. He put her on display in pearls on sailboats. She seemed to enjoy it. Granddad's only failure was that he never had a son. But no matter. The Sinclair daughters were sunburned and blessed. Tall, merry, and rich. Those girls were like princesses in a fairy tale. They were known throughout Boston, Harvard Yard, and Martha's Vineyard for their cashmere cardigans and grand parties. They were made for legends, made for princes and Ivy League schools, ivory statues, and majestic houses. Granddad and Tribber loved the girls so, they couldn't say whom they loved best. First Carrie, then Penny, then Bess, then Carrie again. There were splashy weddings with salmon and harpist, then bright blonde grandchildren and funny blonde dogs. No one could ever have been proud of their beautiful American girls than Tipper and Harry's were back then. They built 3 new houses on their craggy private island and gave them each a name. Windmere for Penny, Redgate for Carrie, and Cuddledown for Bess. I am the eldest Sinclair grandchild. Here is to the island, the fortune, and the expectations. Well, probably. Chapter 4. Me, Johnny, Mirren, and Cat. Gad, Mirren, Johnny, and me. The family calls us for the liars, and probably we deserve it. We are all nearly the same age, and we all have birthdays in the fall. Most years on the island, we've been trouble. Gad started coming to Beechwood the year we were 8. Summer 8, we call it. Before that, Mirren, Johnny, and I weren't liars. We were nothing but cousins, and Johnny was a pain because he didn't like playing with girls. Johnny, he is Bounce. Effort and Snark. Back then, he would hang our Barbies by the necks or shoot us with guns made of Lego.
Lego.
Mirren, she is sugar, curiosity and rain. Back then, she spent long afternoon with Taft and the twins, splashing at the big beach, while I drew pictures on graph paper and read in the hammock on the Claremont house porch. Then Gad came to spend the summers with us. Aunt Carrie's husband left her when she was pregnant with Johnny's brother, Will. I don't know what happened. The family never speaks of it. By summer 8, Will was a baby, and Carrie had taken up with Ed already. This Ed, he was in an art dealer, and he adored the kids. That was all we heard about him when Carrie announced she was bringing him to Beechwood, along with Johnny and the baby. They were the last to arrive that summer, and most of us were on the dock waiting for the boat to pull in. Grant had lifted me up so I could wave at Johnny, who was wearing an orange life vest and shouting over the prow. Granny Tipper stood next to us. She turned away from the boat for a moment, reached in her pocket and brought out a white peppermint, unwrapped it and tucked it into my mouth. As she looked back at the boat, Grant's face changed. I squinted to see what she saw. Carrie stepped off with Will and her hip. He was in baby's yellow life vest and was really no more than a shock of white blonde hair sticking up over it. A shear went up at the sight of him. That vest, which we had all worn as babies. The hair. How wonderful that this little boy we didn't know yet was so obviously a Sinclair. Johnny leapt off the boat and threw his own vest on the dock. First thing, he ran up to Mirren and kicked her. Then he kicked me. Kicked the twins, walked over to our grandparents, and stood up straight. Good to see you, Granny and Granddad. I look forward to a happy summer. Tipper hugged him. Your mother told you to say that, didn't she? Yes, said Johnny. And I'm to say nice to see you again. Good boy. Can I go now? Tipper kissed his freckled cheek. Go on, then. Ed followed Johnny, having stood to help the staff unload the luggage from the motorboat. He was tall and slim. His skin was very dark, Indian heritage, we'd later learn. He wore black framed glasses and was dressed in Deborah City clothes, a lining suit and striped shirt. The pants were wrinkled from traveling. Granddad set me down. Granny Tripper's mouth made a straight line. Then she showed her old teeth and went forward. You must be Ed. What a lovely surprise. He shook hands. Didn't Carrie tell you we were coming? Of course she did. Ed looked around at our white family, turned to Carrie. Where's Gad? They called for him, and he climbed from the inside of the boat, taking off his life vest, looking down to undo the buckles. Mother, Dad, said Carrie, we brought Ed's nephew to play with Johnny. This is Gad Pettle. Granddad reached out and patted Gad's head. Hello, young man. Hello. His father passed on just this year, explained Carrie. He and Johnny are the best of friends. It's a big help to Ed's sisters if we take him for a few weeks. And Gad, you get to have cookouts and go swimming like we talked about, okay? But Gad didn't answer. He was looking at me. His nose was dramatic, his mouth sweet. Skin deep brown, hair black and waving. Body white with energy. Gad seemed spring-loaded, like he was searching for something. He was contemplation, enthusiasm, ambition and strong coffee. I could have looked at him forever. Our eyes locked. I turned and ran away. Gad followed. I could hear his feet behind me on the wooden walkways that crossed the island. I kept running. He kept following. Johnny chased Gad, and Mirren chased Johnny. The adults remained taken on the dock, circling politely around Ed, crowing over baby Will. The littles did whatever littles do. We four stopped running at the tiny beach down by Cuddle Town House. It's a small stretch of sand with high rocks on either side. No one used it much back then. The big beach had softer sand and less seaweed. Mirren took off her shoes, and the rest of us followed. We tossed stones into the water. We just existed. We wrote our names in the sand. Candace, Mirren, Johnny, and Gad. Gad, Johnny, Mirren, and Candace. That was the beginning of us. Johnny begged to have Gad stay longer. He got what he wanted. The next year he begged to have him come for the entire summer. Gad came. Johnny was the first grandson. My grandparents always never said no to Johnny. Chapter 5. Summer 14. Gad and I took out the small motorboat alone. It was just after breakfast. Bess made Mirren play tennis with the twins and Taft. Johnny had started running that year and was doing loops around the perimeter path. Gad found me in the Clermont kitchen and asked, did I want to take the boat out? Not really, I want to go back to bed with a book. Please? Gad almost never said please. Take it out yourself. I can't borrow it, he said. I don't feel right. Of course you can borrow it. Not without one of you. He was being ridiculous. Where do you want to go? I asked. I just want to get off island. Sometimes I can't stand it here. I couldn't imagine then what it was he couldn't stand, but I said all right. We motored out to sea in wind jackets and bathing suits. After a bit, Gad cut the engine. We sat eating pistachios and breathing salt air. The sunlight shone on the water. Let's go in, I said. Gad jumped and I followed, but the water was so much colder than off the beach, it snatched our breath. The sun went behind a cloud. We laughed panic laughs and shouted that it was the stupidest idea to get in the water. What had we been thinking? There were sharks off the coast. Everybody knew that. Don't talk about sharks. God. We scrambled and pushed each other, struggling to be the first one up the ladder at the back of the boat. After a minute, Gad leaned back and let me go first. Not because you're a girl, but because I'm a good person, he told me. Thanks, I stuck out my tongue. But when a shark bites my leg off, promise to write a speech about how awesome I was. Done, I said. Gadwick Matthew, Pethel, made a delicious meal. It seemed hysterically funny to be so cold. We didn't have towels. We huddled together under a fleece blanket we found under the seats, our bare shoulders touching each other, cold feet on top of one another. This is only so we don't get hypothermia, said Gad. Don't think I find you pretty or anything. I know you don't. You're hugging the blanket. Sorry. A pause. Gad said, I do find you pretty, Katie. I didn't mean that the way it came out. In fact, when did you get so pretty? It's distracting. I look the same as always. You change over the school year. It's putting me off my game. You have a game? He nodded solemnly. That is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. What is your game? Nothing penetrates my armor. Hadn't you noticed? That made me laugh. No? Damn, I thought it was working. We changed the subject. Talked about bringing the littles to Edgartown to see a movie in the afternoon. About sharks and whether they really ate people. About plants versus zombies. Then we drove back to the island. Not long after that, Gad started leading me his books and finding me at the tiny beach in the early evenings. He churched me out when I was lying on the windmill lawn with the Goldens. We started walking together on the path that circles the island. Gad in front and me behind. We talk about books or invent imaginary worlds. Sometimes we'd end up walking several times around the edge before we got hungry or bored. Beach roses lined the path, deep pink. Their smell was faint and sweet. One day I looked at Gad, lying in the Clermont hammock with a book, and he seemed, well, like he was mine, like he was my particular person. I got in the hammock next to him, silently. I took the pen out of his hand. He always reads with a pen, and wrote Gad on the back of his left, and Candace on the back of his right. He took the pen from me, wrote Gad on the back of my left, and Candace on the back of my right. I am not talking about fate. I don't believe in destiny or soulmates or the supernatural. I just mean we understood each other, all the way. But we were only 14. I had never kissed a boy, though I would kiss a few the next school year, and somehow we didn't label it love. Chapter 6. Summer 15. I arrived a week later than the others. Dad had left us, and Mummy, and I had all that shopping to do, consulting the decorator and everything. Johnny and Mirren met us at the dock, pink in the cheeks and full of summer plans. They were staging a family tennis tournament, and had bookmarked ice cream recipes. We would go sailing, build bonfires. The little swam and yelled like always. The aunt smiled chilly smiles. After the bustle of arrival, everyone went to Clermont for cocktail hour. I went to Red Gate, looking for Gad. Red Gate is a much smaller house than Clermont, but it still has 4 bedrooms up top. It's where Johnny, Gad, and Will lived with Aunt Carrie, plus Ed, when he was there, which wasn't often. I walked to the kitchen door and looked through the screen. Gad didn't see me at first. He was standing at the counter wearing a worn gray t-shirt and jeans. His shoulders were broader than I remembered. He untied a dried flower from where it hung upside down on a ribbon on the window over the sink. The flower was a beach rose, pink and loosely constructed, the kind that grown along the beechwood perimeter. Gad, my Gad. He had picked me a rose from our favorite walking place. He had hung it to dry and waited for me to arrive on the island so he could give it to me. I had kissed an unimportant boy, or 3 by now. I had lost my dad. I had come here to this island from a house of tears and falsehood. And I saw Gad, and I saw that rose in his hand. And in that one moment, with the sunlight from the window shining in on him, the apples on the kitchen counter, the smell of wood and ocean in the air, I did call it love. It was love, and it hit me so hard I leaned against the screen door that it still stood between us, just to say vertical. I wanted to touch him like he was a bunny, a kitten, something too special and soft. Your fingertips can't leave it alone. The universe was good because he was in it. I loved the hole in his jeans and the dirt on his bare feet and the scab on his elbows, the scar that lay through one eyebrow. Gad, my Gad. As I stood there staring, he put the rose in an envelope. He searched for a pen, begging drawers open and shut, found one in his own pocket and wrote. I didn't realize he was writing an address until he pulled a roll of stamps from a kitchen drawer. Gad stamped the envelope, wrote a return address. It wasn't for me. I left the Red Gate door before he saw me and ran down to the perimeter. I watched the darkening sky alone. I tore all of the roses off a single sad bush and threw them, one after another, into the angry sea. Ich habe das Gefühl, ich lese richtig scheiße. Und wir sind erst seit 18. Junge, Junge, Junge. Und es ist einfach schon gleich 22 Uhr. Puh. Okay. Chapter 7. Johnny told me about the New York girlfriend that evening. Her name was Raquel. Johnny had even met her. He lives in New York, like Gad does, but downtown with Carrie and Ed, while Gad lives uptown with his mom. Johnny said Raquel was a modern dancer and wore black clothes. Mirren's brother, Tev, told me Raquel had sent Gad a package of homemade brownies. Liberty and Bonnie told me Gad had pictures of her on his phone. Gad didn't mention her at all, but he had trouble meeting my eyes. That first night, I cried and bit my fingers and drank wine. I snuck from the Clermont palm tree. I spun violently into the sky, raging and banging stars from their moorings, swirling and vomiting. I hit my fist into the wall of the shower. I washed off the shame and anger in cold, cold water. Then I shivered in my bed, like the abandoned dog that I was, my skin shaking over my bones. The next morning, and every day thereafter, I act normal. I told my scratchin hi. We sailed and made bonfires. I won the tennis tournament. Ich weiß nicht, wie es ausspricht. We made vats of ice cream and I lay in the sun. One night, the four of us ate a picnic down on the tiny beach. Steamed clams, potatoes, and sweet corn. The staff made it. I didn't know their names. Johnny and Mirren carried the food down in metal roasting pans. We ate around the flames of our bonfire, dripping butter into the sand. Then Gat made triple-deckers, mores for all of us. I looked at his hands in the firelight, sliding marshmallows into a long stick. Where once had he our names written, now he had taken to writing the titles of books he wanted to read. That night on the left, being and, on the right, nothingness. I had written on my hands too, a quotation I liked. On the left, lived in, on the right, today. Want to know what I'm thinking about? Gat asked. Yes, I said. No, said Johnny. I'm wondering how we can say your granddad owns this island. Not legally, but actually. Please don't get started on the evils of the pilgrims, moaned Johnny. No, I'm asking. How can we say land belongs to anyone? Gat waved at the sand, the ocean, the sky. Mirren shrugged. People buy and sell land all the time. Can't we talk about sex or murder? Asked Johnny. Gat ignored him. Maybe land shouldn't belong to people at all. Or maybe there should be limits on what they can own. He leaned forward. When I went to India this winter, on that voluntary trip, we were building toilets. Building them because people there in this own village didn't have them. We all know you went to India, said Johnny. You told us like 47 times. Here's something I love about Gat. He is so enthusiastic, so relentlessly interested in the world, that he has trouble imagining the possibility that other people will be bored by what he's saying, even when they tell him outright. But also, he doesn't like to let us off easy. He wants to make us think, even when we don't feel like thinking. He poked a streak into the members. I'm saying we should talk about it. Not everyone has private islands. Some people work on them. Some work in factories. Some don't have work. Some don't have food. Stop talking now, said Mirren. Stop talking forever, said Johnny. We have a robbed view of humanity on Beechwood, Gat said. I don't think you see that. Shut up, I said. I give you more chocolate if you shut up. And Gat did shut up, but his face contorted. He stood abruptly, picked up a rock from the sand, and threw it with all his force. He pulled off his sweatshirt and kicked off his shoes. Then he walked into the sea in his jeans, angry. I watched the muscles of his shoulders in the moonlight, the spray kicking up as he splashed in. He dove, and I thought, if I don't follow him now, that girl Rachel's got him. If I don't follow him now, he'll go away. From the liars, from the island, from our family, from me. I threw off my sweater and followed Gat into the sea in my dress. I crashed into the water, swimming out to where he lay on his back. His wet hair was slicked off his face, showing the skin scar through one eyebrow. I reached for his arm. Gat? He startled, stood in the waist-high sea. Sorry, I whispered. I don't tell you to shut up, Katie, he said. I don't ever say that to you. I know, he was silent. Please don't shut up, I said. I felt his eyes go over my body and my sweat dress. I talk too much, he said. I politicize everything. I like it when you talk, I said, because it was true. When I stopped to listen, I did like it. It said everything makes me, he paused. Things are messed up in the world, that's all. Yeah. Maybe I should, Gad took my hands, turned them over to look at the words written on the back. I should live for it. I should live for today and not be agitating all the time. My hand was in his wet hand. I shivered. His arms were bare and wet. We used to hold hands all the time, but he hadn't touched me all summer. It's good that you look at the world the way you do, I told him. Gad let go of me and leaned back into the water. Johnny wants me to shut up. I'm boring you and Mirren. I looked at his profile. He wasn't just Gad. He was contemplation and enthusiasm. Ambition and strong coffee. All that was there, in the lids of his brown eyes, his smooth skin, his lower lip pushed out. There was cold energy inside. I'll tell you a secret, I whispered. What? I reached out and touched his arm again. He didn't pull away. Where we say shut up, Gad, that isn't what we mean at all. No? What we mean is we love you. You remind us that we were selfish bastards. You're not one of us that way. He dropped his eyes, smiled. Is that what you mean, Cardi? Katie? Yes, I told him. I let my fingers trail down his floating, outstretched arm. I can't believe you're in that water. Johnny was standing ankle deep in the ocean. His jeans rolled up. It's the Arctic. My toes are freezing off. It's nice once you get in, Gad called back. Seriously? Don't be weak, yelled Gad. Be manly, I get in this stupid water. Johnny laughed and charged in. Mirren followed. And it was exquisite. The night looming above us. The hum of the ocean, the back of gold. Boah, ich bin ehrlich, Leute. Bis jetzt finde ich es richtig langweilig. Ich habe gar keinen Bock, das weiterzulesen.
Das Ding ist, der Kinderpodcast für 25 Minuten.
Und ich bin auch erst auf Seite 23. Aber ich finde es bis jetzt wirklich langweilig. Und ich habe auch das Gefühl, dass ich richtig scheiße lese, aber das ist noch eine andere Sache. Naja. Wir lesen jetzt noch weiter. Warte mal. Ich weiß jetzt nicht. Dann kommt vielleicht der zweite Part oder so. Können wir mal nachgucken. Okay, also auf Seite 44 kommt Part 2. Das heißt, ich muss noch genau 22 Seiten lesen, also nochmal so viel. Naja, wir gucken mal. Chapter 8. That night I had trouble sleeping. After midnight, he called my name. I looked out my window. Gad was lying on his back on the wooden walkway that leads to Windmere. The golden retrievers were lying near him, all five. Bosch, Grendel, Poppy, Prince Philip, and Fatima. Their tails thumped gently. The moonlight made them all look blue. Come down, he called. I did. Mummy's light was out. The rest of the island was dark. We were alone, except for all the dogs. Scoot, I told him. The walkway wasn't wide. When I lay down next to him, our arms touched. Mine bare and his in an olive green hunting jacket. We looked at the sky, so many stars. It seemed like a celebration, a grand illicit party the galaxy was holding after the humans had been put to bed. I was glad Gad didn't try to sound knowledgeable about constellations or say stupid stuff about wishing on stars. But I didn't know what to make of his silence either. Can I hold your hand? He asked. I put mine in his. The universe is seeming really huge right now, he told me. I need something to hold on to. I'm here, His thumb rubbed the center of my palm. All my nerves concentrated there, alive to every movement of his skin on mine. "I am not sure I'm a good person," he said after a while. "I'm not sure I am either," I said. "I'm winging it." "Yeah," Gad was silent for a moment. "Do you believe in God?" "Halfway," I tried to think about it seriously. I knew Gad wouldn't settle for a flippant answer. "When things are bad, I'll pray or imagine someone watching over me, listening. Like the first few days after my dad left, I thought about God, for protection. But the rest of the time, I'm trudging along in my everyday life. It's not even slightly spiritual." "I don't believe anymore," Gad said. "That trip to India, the poetry. No God I can imagine would let that happen. Then I came home and started noticing it on the streets of New York. People sick and starving in one of the richest nations in the world. I can't think that anyone's watching over those people, which means no one is watching over me either. That doesn't make you a bad person." "My mother believes. She was raised Buddhist, but goes to Methodist church now. She's not very happy with me." Gad hardly ever talked about his mother. "You can't believe just because she tells you to," I said. "No, the question is, how to be a good person if I don't believe anymore?" We started at the sky, and we stared at the sky. The dogs went into wet mare via the dog flap. "You're cold," Gad said. "Let me give you my jacket." I wasn't cold, but I sat up. He sat up too. Unbuttoned his olive hunting jacket and shrugged it off, handed it to me. It was warm from his body, much too wet across the shoulders. His arms were bare now. I wanted to kiss him there while I was wearing his hunting jacket, but I didn't. Maybe he loved Raquel. Those photos on his phone, that dried beach rose in an envelope. Chapter 9. At breakfast the next morning, Mummy asked me to go through Dad's things in the Whitmer attic and take what I wanted. She would get rid of the rest. Whitmer is gabled and angular. Two of the five bedrooms have slanted roofs, and it's the only house on the island with a full attic. There's a big porch and a modern kitchen, updated with marble countertops that look like little out of place. The room are airy and filled with dogs. Gad and I climbed up the attic with glass bottles of iced tea and sat on the floor. The room smelled like wood. A square of light glowed through from the window. We had been in the attic before. Also, we had never been in the attic before. The books were Dad's vacation reading. All sports memoirs, cozy mysteries, and work star tell-alls by old people I'd never heard of. Gad wasn't really looking. He was sorting the books by color. A wet pile, a blue, brown, white, yellow. "Don't you want anything to read?" I asked. "Maybe. How about First Base and Way Beyond?" Gad laughed, shook his head, straightened his blue pill. "Work on with my bad self? Hero of the dance floor?" He was laughing again, then serious. "Candace?" "What?" "Shut up." I let myself look at him a long time. Every curve of his face was familiar, and also, I had never seen him before. Gad smiled, shining, bashful. He got to his knees, kicking over his colorful book piles on the process. He reached out and stroked my hair. "I love you, Katie. I mean it." I leaned in and kissed him. He touched my face, ran his hand down my neck and along my collarbone. The light from the attic window shone down on us. Our kiss was electric and soft and tentative and certain, terrifying and exactly right. I felt the love rush from me to Gad and from Gad to me. We were warm and shivering and young and ancient and alive. I was thinking, it's true. We already love each other. We already do. Junge, was geht jetzt? Aber jetzt küssen die sich einfach. Okay. Chapter 10. Granddad walked in on us. Ged sprang up, strapped awkwardly on the color-sorted books that had spilled across the floor. I am interrupting? Granddad said. No, sir. Yes, I most certainly am. Sorry about the dust, I said awkward. Penny thought there might be something I'd like to read. Granddad pulled an old wicker chair to the center of the room and sat down, bending over the books. Ged remained standing. He had to bend his head beneath the attic's slanted roof. Watch yourself, young man, said Granddad, sharp and sudden. Pardon me? Your head. You could get hurt. You're right, said Ged. You're right. I could get hurt. So watch yourself, Granddad repeated. Ged turned and went down the stairs without another word. Granddad and I sat in silence for a moment. He likes to read, I said eventually. I thought he might want some of Dad's books. You are very dear to me, Katie, mein Güte, said Granddad, patting my shoulder. My first grandchild. I love you too, Granddad. Remember how I took you to a baseball game? You were only 4. Sure. You had never had Cracker Jack, said Granddad. I know, you bought 2 boxes. I had to put you on my lap so you could see. You remember that, Katie? I did. Tell me. I knew the kind of answer Granddad wanted me to give. It was a request he made quite often. He loved retelling key moments in St. Clair family history, enlarging their importance. He was always asking what something meant to you, and you were supposed to come back with details, images, maybe lesson learned. Usually, I adore telling these stories and hearing them told. The legendary Sinclairs, what fun we'd had. How beautiful we were. But that day, I didn't want to. It was your first baseball game, Granddad prompted. Afterward, I bought you a red plastic bat. You practiced your swing on the lawn of the Boston house. Did Granddad know what he'd interrupted? Would he care if he did now? When I would see Ged again, would he break up with Raquel? What would happen between us? You went to make Crack Jack at home, Granddad went on, though he knew I knew the story. And Penny helped you make it, but you cried when there weren't red and white boxes to put it in. Do you remember that? Yes, Granddad, I said, giving in. You went all the way back to the ballpark that same day and bought 2 more boxes of Cracker Jack. You ate them on the drive home, just so you could give me the boxes. I remember. Satisfied, he stood up and we left the attic together. Granddad was shaky, going downstairs, so he put his hand on my shoulder. I found Ged on the perimeter path and ran to where he stood, looking out at the water. The wind was coming hard and my hair flew on my eyes. When I kissed him, his lips were salty. Okay, Leute, ich glaube, ich höre jetzt auf. Ich habe keine Lust mehr. Ich finde das Buch... Also ich muss sagen, das Buch ist halt irgendwie... Also bis jetzt finde ich es wirklich langweilig. Aber wir werden sehen, wie sich das noch entwickelt. Oh, ich bin jetzt echt müde. Ich hoffe, ich habe jetzt wirklich nicht allzu scheiße gelesen. Und ja... Bis zum nächsten Mal und ciao.